Chapter 6.
"Impossible," I said, once I recovered from the shock of Shay's words. "There is absolutely nothing that could make me not want you. In fact, I'm pretty sure my want of you grows exponentially by the second."
"Oh, you say this now, but you don't understand, Alex."
Shay shook out her hands in a little anxious motion, and she took up her pacing again, only this time it was more agitated. "Yes, you've said," I murmured calmly, and reached out a hand as if I was attempting to soothe a spooked horse that wanted to bolt at any minute. "And yet, my declaration stands. I don't need to understand, because my mind is not changing. I love you, Shelia."
"Oh, I'm not perfect, despite what you see, Alex."
Shay rambled and paced even faster with one hand gripping her scarlet flyaway hair.
"I'm damaged beyond repair. I'm... Ah!"
On her next pass, Shay must have stepped wrong because her ankle turned and she lost her balance. "Whoa, whoa, whoa, easy!" I braced the Phoenix woman by the arms, and if I hadn't already been so close, she would have hit the ground hard with all of her whirling dervish momentum.
"Oh, ouch!"
she hissed and leaned heavily into me as she steadied herself on her non-injured foot.
"Oh, how foolish of me."
"How much does it hurt?" I asked, as I glanced down at her lame foot hovering off the ground.
I think it's... Ow!"
She gingerly tried testing it, but had to stop quickly when it was clear her ankle was sprained at the very least, and couldn't tolerate any sort of pressure. "I accept your non-perfect ankles," I stated, and lifted my bride up into my arms, princess style. "And from here on out, I will dedicate myself as the Hercules to your Meg."
"It's not my ankles that are imperfect,"
Shay said in a small voice as she rested her head against my shoulder.
"And who are Hercules and Meg?"
"Never mind that," I said, as I held her even closer. "Shay, whatever it is, please talk to me. No matter what you tell me, I'm not going anywhere, I promise."
"Can we go back?"
Shay asked, and then looked up at me with green eyes glittering with tears.
"I want to tell you everything, just not here in this empty menagerie. It makes me sad."
"Of course, sweetheart," I murmured. And then, without further ado, I walked us out of the glass building, down the garden steps, and toward the two canterflies sunning their wings in the last remains of the golden sunlight. "Can you fly with that ankle?"
"No,"
Shay sighed. "I thought not," I said, and sat her down on the ledge of the fountain so I could kneel down and carefully work off the knee-high riding boot. She hissed a few times, and I cringed right along with her. "I know it hurts, I'm sorry, but it'll be a lot better if we get this off you before the swelling really starts to settle in. I'd better wrap it, though."
"Where did you learn this?"
she asked, as she watched me rip the bottom hem off my tunic and then wrap her ankle like the fabric was an ace bandage. "I used to work on a big property like this when I was younger," I explained as I finished tying off the improvised bandage. "One day I was out repairing the fences. My foot got tangled up in some barbed wire and I nearly broke my ankle from it. The good news is I was wearing boots that acted like an impromptu cast and kept my ankle stable while it healed. The bad news is I had to wear that same smelly boot everywhere for 6 weeks. You do not want that, trust me. Can you imagine bathing in a boot you can't take off? I almost broke my other ankle when I tried. Wow, the body odor was awful too, and I was not a popular guy that summer, let me tell you." My inane rambling had the desired effect of getting Shay to smile a little as the dark clouds over her expression lifted somewhat.
"I'll take your word for it, my good sir,"
she murmured and carted her thin fingers through my hair. "Are you ready, my lady?" I asked as I rose to my full height and stuck out my hand.
"Yes, I'm ready,"
she said, and I carefully helped her to her feet with my arms securely around her waist in case she lost her balance again on her one good foot. Then Shay whistled through her fingers and both canterflies trotted over.
"Victory, fly home."
The white canterfilly shook her head and stamped one of her front hooves as if she was a toddler refusing to leave the playground because she was having so much fun. Shay then grabbed the canterfilly's bridle and brought her head down so she could look directly into all four of Victory's multifaceted eyes. A silent form of communication seemed to pass between them until Victory flapped her gray glass wings once and bowed her shining white head as if she was sorry. Then the beautiful butterfly Pegasus leapt into the air. "What was that?" I asked.
"She didn't want to leave and let Prosper have all the fun. But then I explained I couldn't ride her because of my foot, and now the poor thing feels guilty."
She tisked through her teeth as we watched the canter filly land and then head into the stables like a good girl.
She is young, and too ambitious for her own good. But she has a tendency to be too hard on herself. I must ask the head stable groom, Ellis, to brush her extra tonight.
Prosper whistled, and an image of the stables and of Victory's stall flashed in my mind, along with a feeling of impatient longing. Just hold on a second, Props, I said, and restrained him by the bridle like I saw Shay do with Victory. It seemed to work in the sense that it grabbed the headstrong beast's attention. Now listen, we need to fly back up to the house so Shay can take care of her hurt foot. Then you may join your girlfriend in the stables, and if you're good, I'll give you more of your favorite ash roots, a whole bushel. Prosper huffed and bowed his head once, as if he were shaking hands over an important business transaction. And then he turned to the side to offer his saddle. I lifted Shay by her petite waist so she could sit side saddle while I mounted Prosper behind her and wrapped my arms around her small frame so she wouldn't fall. Good boy, Prosper. Nice and easy now, I said, and nudged his sides with my heels. Let's go home. The black and orange canterfly whistled in confirmation, but instead of launching into the air on his back two legs as he would always do, the butterfly Pegasus instead turned so he was facing the wind and fanned out his monarch-like wings as wide as they would go. The powerful appendages caught the wind like sails on a sailboat, and the canterfly was lifted into the air as gently as a yawning lamb. The six-legged beast was so good on his word about getting Shay somewhere so she could rest her ankle that he even flew us up to one of the many balconies of the grand estate just so Shay wouldn't have to deal with any stairs.
What a gentleman,
my phoenix wife said, as I helped her down from the saddle and steadied her against me.
Thank you for such an easy ride, Prosper.
You earned it, buddy. Thank you, I said to my faithful mount, and telegraphed an image of a mountain of purple carrot things, along with my feelings of gratitude. The majestic butterfly Pegasus whistled and ruffled the top of my head with his anteater snout. And then, without anything further, he reared back on two legs and launched into the sky, bent on returning to his beloved Victory.
I better keep a weather eye on those two,
Shay said, as she watched the dark smudge that was Prosper land in front of the stables. It was almost dark out, and it would have been nearly impossible to see the black canterfly if it wasn't for the flashes of orange in his monarch-patterned wings.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a baby manapillar born sometime in the near future.
Aw, I said, as I pictured one of the creepy cute caterpillars often seen pulling carriages all over Nada Isle with their four bulbous eyes, shaggy fur, and fuzzy antenna. I didn't know manapillars and canterflies were the same species.
They are, and they aren't,
Shay explained, as she let me pick her up again bridal style so she could keep the weight off her sprain.
All canterflies start out as manapillars, but not all manapillars possess the ability to morph and get their wings. It's a delicate breeding process to ensure the metamorphosis is successful, but in the case of true love, I like to let nature run its course.
Well said, I told her as I walked us over the threshold where the balcony met an opulent suite of rooms. The rooms were like the rest of the Immaculate Mansion and featured a tastefully decorated array of priceless art on the walls, wardrobes and nightstands made of intricately hand-carved blonde wood, and comfortable-looking furniture that sectioned up the big space and separated a nice-sized sitting area. The rest of the room happened to consist of a stately marble fireplace in front of the royal blue chaise lounge, as well as a comfortable-looking four-poster bed with a canopy of gauzy material that acted like a curtain to keep mosquitoes out. I didn't know if Aventol had mosquitoes or not, but there was bound to be some sort of flying pests that needed to be kept at bay from the net, given how the balcony didn't seem to have or need doors.
"Please put me on the lounge, husband,"
Shay requested softly.
"I would like to put my foot up while I talk to you."
"You got it," I said, as I settled her down on the plush chaise and then went over to the bed so I could grab a small pillow. "Pop this under your ankle."
"Thank you."
She did as she was told and then leaned her head back against the rest so she could close her eyes as if she needed a moment to compose herself before she started the arduous task of speaking about her painful past. I reached out and clasped the hand not tangled in her loose hair. "We don't have to do this all at once, you know. We can take our time. And you don't have to tell me anything you don't want to."
I do want to,
she rasped through a voice strung taut with emotion like a bowstring.
I want you to know every part of me so badly, I feel as if it's burning me up inside.
I want that too, I admitted, as my heart pounded in my ears. And if I'm being honest, I'll also confess it's overwhelming as fuck. And I'm a little terrified at the sheer velocity of how quickly I fell in love with you. So I will tell you as many times as it takes. I mean it when I say I'll never leave.
No matter if I'm broken beyond repair.
She trembled out in a small, scared voice, still tinged with hope, despite herself. No matter what, I reiterated, and cupped her face so I could try showing her with a passionate kiss instead of telling her. If there were any more lingering doubts before the kiss, they melted away like snowflakes. And when I pulled away from her, I was glad to see the shadow of fear had eased somewhat in her jeweled eyes.
I trust you more than I've ever trusted anyone,
Shay said, and pressed her brow against my collarbone for a minute before she leaned back and took my hands in hers.
I suppose I should start with a little history about Nata Isle's native people. You've no doubt already discovered Avantol's denizens come in all shapes and sizes, but most of the natives who hail from Nata have bird-like subspecies characteristics.
Yeah, I may have noticed that, I said, and I brought some of Shay's riot of crimson tangles over one of her delicate shoulders so I could admire the gold and champagne-colored feathers that were shot throughout her crest and mane.
Then you also may have noticed something peculiar,
the Phoenix Woman continued as she set to work undoing some of the braids Zoe had put in her hair earlier.
For all that Natus people represent the children of the sky, no one has any wings.
I frowned as I thought back to all of the times I observed the various animalistic traits the people of this strange world exhibited. I'd seen men who were half-lizard and could unhinge their jaws like Ambassador Siskern of the Isle Tear, koala and sloth-like men like Jenner and Arvid, people with horns and antlers and rabbit ears, and even my first wife was a catwoman from Vartha. But when I tried to remember if I'd seen any of the Nata natives sporting a pair of bird wings, I came up empty. Wait, that wasn't quite true. When I first got here, I was hiding in the woods near the village square, and I spied two little farm kids getting ready for Sunday, I said, as the memory came flooding back. I had just woken up on a weird island after being zapped mysteriously by a magic pocket watch, out swam a giant fish I was convinced was going to eat me, dug my way through the massive wall surrounding the island, and stumbled toward any signs of civilization I could find. The little girl was talking to her brother about getting something sweet to eat, and seeing her brown feathers and little brown wings was the first time I really knew I wasn't in my world anymore, I added.
Ah, you're talking of Farmer Gaul and his fledgling, Misha,
Shay said as she recognized who I was referring to.
The Gauls have served under Asher Redburn's legacy for many decades, and it is fortuitous their daughter was blessed by Mercedes thus. Not all females born on Nata have wings, and these days it is rarer and rarer for any to be born at all.
Is it only females who are born with wings? I asked as I leaned forward, and I was eager to learn more about this island that, for all intents and purposes, was my home now.
Yes, indeed.
Shay nodded, and started unraveling the braids on the other side of her head. The crimson and gold strands left behind crimped waves to her already wavy hair, and I couldn't help but run my fingers through it.
Will you brush it?
What, your hair? I asked, and looked up from my hypnotic task into her coy and blushing expression.
Yes?
She peeped as if she was asking for something she really wanted but was too embarrassed by it. Can I really? I grinned like a kid on Christmas Eve, and she giggled and nodded.
It is considered a very intimate thing to be groomed by someone else,
Shay explained another tidbit about her subspecies.
Only family members and lovers preen each other. Bala never...
Say no more, I interrupted, but not unkindly. Where's your brush?
Over on the vanity.
Shay pointed to a frilly feminine vanity with a mirror and a cushioned stool. On the top of the vanity was a wide paddle brush with a heavy silver handle that fishtailed at the end. Curiously, in between the fishtails were what looked to be the fine teeth of a comb, and I wondered what that end was used for. Can you scoot forward a little? I asked, when I came back over with the brush in hand. And then I situated myself behind her on the lounge so she could rest between my long legs as I carefully began to drag the brush through her silky red hair. Shay shuddered against me a few times and sighed in pleasure as we just sat for a few moments and enjoyed this surprisingly intimate act. I didn't think brushing hair could be considered erotic, but the way her hands stroked the outside of my muscular thighs in time with the motion of the brush ignited a delicious slow burn of arousal to build within me. But it was a comfortable slow burn, the type I wanted to savor for as long as possible. So I put my carnal thoughts aside for the most part and focused on detangling the silky strands without pulling Shay's scalp too hard. "You were saying?" I murmured close to her ear, just to feel her shiver again, and I tried not to let my imagination run away from me with the proof of how sensitive she was.
"Females are the only ones born with the blessing, because, legend has it, the women of Nata Isle used to be fierce sky warriors who aided the fight against the demon tide,"
Shay continued.
"Now, however, being born with wings is more of a status symbol, just because of its rarity. In the case of Misha Gaul, her whole family will be provided for by the Asher they eventually sell her to when she debuts."
"They would sell their own daughter?" I asked, as I stopped brushing for a moment. "That seems cruel."
"Oh, it's really not,"
Shay said, as she half turned around in my lap.
"It's considered a high honor for the Asher to be approached by the young fledgling's family."
"Wait, the family is the one who approaches the Asher? I thought the Ashers were the only ones with any sort of power when it came to acquiring new assets." My tongue tripped over referring to a person as an asset, especially a child. "Why do they need the family's permission and not just take the fledglings?"
"We are talking about a sacred and rare blessing from the goddess Mercedes,"
my wife said in a reverent voice.
"Not even the greediest of Ashers would dare try to go against the family that was gifted enough to bear the fledgling into this world. But if you're worried about Misha, you need not be. Asher Redburn is an honorable man, and the Gauls have been treated well by him. Redburn will probably take her as his wife when she is of childbearing age and ready to lose her wings."
"But I met Asher Redburn," I said, as I remembered the jackrabbit duelist who was at the championship gala. "He's so much older than the little girl I saw."
"Yes, but she won't be a little girl forever,"
Shay said reasonably. It was true, and I resumed brushing Shay's hair while my brain chewed on this new paradigm shift. This world was not my own, and it always took a little bit to wrap my head around the occasional culture shock and shake some of the conventions I was used to back on Earth. The more I molded over, though, the more I realized it wasn't that unusual for arranged marriages to happen between families, even though those intended to be wed were still children. In the United States, this fell out of style a long time ago, but I read something about other countries like India that still followed this practice. I would just have to chalk this up to another one of those when in Rome moments and just go with it, but there still was one small detail about what Shay said that niggled at me. "What did you mean when you said, when she is ready to lose her wings? Did the fledglings drop them somehow, like deer antlers?" I smoothed her crimson fall of lush hair back from her pretty feathered crest.
I do not know what a deer is, but no. The fledglings do not lose their wings of their own accord,"
the Phoenix woman said, and I could feel a tension begin to gather in between her shoulder blades.
"When a young fledgling comes of age, she undergoes a ceremony where her wings are removed from her."
"Like amputated?" I stopped brushing again so I could turn her slightly in order to see her face. "That sounds barbaric. What the fuck?"
"It's not as horrifying as it sounds, but I know to a traveler it may seem upsetting,"
Shay hurried to say. "It sounds like pointless mutilation," I deadpanned.
"It is not pointless, especially when it is necessary for the fledgling to lose her wings if she is to have any hope to bear children,"
Shay said, and her emerald eyes cut down and to the side as more and more of her previous anxiety slowly bubbled to the surface. "Shay," I said, as I placed a hand on her back so I could rub the tension out of her shoulders. But it was as if my touch was a hot iron brand, because she flinched violently and leaned away. "Sweetheart?"
Sorry, I'm sorry,"
she mumbled, and she began to shake all over.
Just give me a moment."
I nodded and folded my hands in my lap so she wouldn't feel threatened. And then I waited calmly and quietly for her to compose herself. Finally, after a few deep breaths, she slowly turned to the side and carefully tucked her head under my chin as she leaned against my broad chest. "May I hold you?" I asked in a low voice.
I would like that very much, please,
she answered. And with a great deal of relief, I wrapped her gently in my arms in a way I hoped felt secure without being suffocating. How's your ankle? I lifted her left knee and grabbed the small pillow that fell to the ground so I could prop her wrapped foot up again.
It aches, but it's tolerable,
Shay murmured, and then sighed against me.
Thank you for your understanding. This subject is difficult to relay.
Take your time, I said patiently, and continued to comb through the feathers at her temple, which seemed to settle her even more.
I was a fledgling once,
she began, and I stilled for a moment, and then continued to smooth her crest.
My debut was grand, and I was set to enter a union with the Lord Asher of Vartha. The culling ceremony was standard, and normally it's supposed to be painless. But in my case, the procedure was botched.
Botched how? I asked, and my heart thudded hard in my chest at the thought of her in even the slightest pain.
In order for a fledgling to be able to bear children, she must be completely rid of her wings. But they were unable to fully remove mine, and a small fragment remained buried too deep for them to take out without killing me.
Shay unconsciously reached back and gripped the cusp of her right shoulder.
When my intended found out I could not provide him with strong heirs, or any heirs at all, he backed out of the betrothal. My father was on the verge of disinheriting me, and it came to blows with my brother Horace. I hate to even admit this, but that was when Balaren stepped in and made my father a proposition to save me from disgrace. It wasn't until later I realized how cruel he could be.
The glowstones that were a common source of light in this electricity-less world grew bright with the setting sun and cast her in glowing ambient light that made the usually fiery Phoenix woman seem diminished, and she stared off into the distance with a haunted look shadowing her soulful eyes. I hated that look, and I vowed right then and there it was my mission in life to try and replace said expression of pain with one of joy. Oh, Shay, I said.
Don't you see?
She asked, and turned to me with her tear-stained face.
I can never give you heirs, and a duelist's wife is only as good as her ability to provide her husband a legacy.
Maybe that's the case with all the other duelists in Aventol, but well, not with me, I said. But her expression continued to break as if the concept was impossible for her to grasp, and I knew I needed to do something to get through to her. Listen to me. I don't know who told you that is your only measure of worth, but from now on, that is no longer the case.
I don't...
My distraught wife finally dissolved into tears and curled into me as if she'd lost all of her strength. Oh, sweetheart, I murmured and rocked her in my arms. Tell me what to do. What do you need? Shay breathed a few times and choked off her sobs as if this was something she'd trained herself to do. And it was almost worse than hearing the heartbreaking sobs from a few moments ago.
Alex! Oh, Alex!
She whispered as she clung onto me like she was holding on for dear life. Maybe she was. Just like with Zoe, Shay's plight exemplified how hard it was to live in this feudalistic world where the powerful few reigned, and everyone else was at their mercy. Even though some of the Ashers demonstrated kindness, like Mech, others exercised cruelty. And the people who were considered assets or property were usually who ended up being collateral damage. But I was never going to be like those kinds of Ashers for as long as the goddess gave me air to fucking breathe. There's nothing else I can tell you, only that I love you, Shay, I said, and I held her dear face between my palms as if I could telegraph to her my conviction through osmosis via my hands alone. You and Zoe mean the world to me. And there is no place I'd rather be than here with the both of you. I didn't really have much going for me back where I come from, to be honest. So this is it for me. You are it for me.
I love you, Alex,
Shay whispered, and gripped my wrists so she could caress me with her thumbs, and her tears seemed to evaporate under the slow-burning heat that glowed in her Celtic green eyes.
Will you show me?
I will spend the rest of my days showing you for as long as you let me. I stated matter-of-factly, as if I was talking about the sky being blue and the sun being hot. Then my gorgeous Phoenix wife kissed me as if she was drowning, and I couldn't bring us together close enough. When we finally broke apart, she gripped my biceps and she panted for air.
Alex, please.
Shay bit her rosy bottom lip as her pupils dilated into two fathomless black pools.
Make love to me.